11-1 tomorrow and Sunday. Thank you guys. Sorry.
But Jonah, can I please get a selfie with you? My friend loves your show and he could make a
selfie with Dad. I guess maybe. Sure. I know how to work a DSLR.
I don't even want to talk.
Chen. Never let them know your next move. I'm sorry, coffee was more important than you people.
Understandable. This we knew.
Yeah. Don't blame you.
How we doing, guys? How's the con?
Be honest or tactical?
Terrible. You hate it?
Excellent, actually.
Registration was a miracle. No line.
Yeah, right.
Really? What time? Like today?
Earlier. Yeah, I'm gonna start.
I had to wait an hour yesterday.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not.
I had to wait at least a second yesterday.
Anyone go through the airport line on the balcony last night? We had like an airport style like check-in kiosk outside, and we were like ripping through people in like 5 minutes. Cool. Well, welcome. Can y'all in the back hear me all right?
Yep.
Yeah. This thing kind of seems like a moot point. It's not a particularly large room. The con is going well.
Don't curse it.
Huh?
Don't curse yourself.
Oh no, we've been saying it all day and it continues to go well. Trust me, we can tell when it's going wrong. So, I usually have like a kind of spiel that I do off the top of my head, but I'm just going to ask right off the bat. I'm not going to answer them at first, but who has a question that they're here to get answered in particular? Or are you just here to listen to me talk? Yeah.
I have questions.
I would hope so. I'm not going to give you an answer right away, but what questions do you have?
The nonprofit starting process.
Like how to start a business?
Yeah. How to set it up. Like we've looked at LegalZoom and they want like $1,000 to do it. If you want to do it like not the LegalZoom.
Okay.
Or it's probably more expensive.
Okay. Anything you wanted to ask other than just that? Or is that mostly it? I'm just trying to get a criteria of like what to talk about so I can try to check your guys' boxes. Anyone else have like a question that's on their mind in particular? Just here to hear what I have to say.
Well, this is the hardest part about convention that we're running a convention that people don't really think about.
The hardest part. Okay, cool. Awesome. Alright, well, nice to see you guys. My name's Drain. I have been running Furrydelphia since its inception. I am one of the two founding members. The way that Furrydelphia happened is myself and all my friends back in the good year 2015, which sounds like recent history, but was like a decade ago. Our favorite convention to go to was a con called FA United, which was located in New Jersey, about an hour-ish drive away from Philly. The con had its ups and it had its downs. It was never particularly good, but it was fun because it was a local con, and all the local people to New Jersey, Philly, Delaware, all those people always went. Through circumstances, that convention ended up moving to Virginia, and after COVID, ended up closing their doors entirely, but that's future history.
I went for the last FAU before it closed.
Yeah. So, basically, FAU moved out of New Jersey down to Virginia, and after that happened, the closest convention to here was either Furpocalypse or FAU or Furthermore. Furpoc being 3 hours to the north and FAU, Furthermore, both being 3 hours to the south. They were about 10-minute drive from each other, which is probably why FAU didn't really survive when they moved down there. Too much competition. Other than that, we have Anthrocon, 5 hours out west, and Anthro New England, 6 hours up north. And after that, you're pretty much flying anywhere else. So, with all of the people in Philly and Delaware, New Jersey, like this whole tri-state bundle that we have going on here, The nearest con being a 3-hour drive was just like a drag, like a bummer, basically. I don't know how else to put it. And so I'm not, it sounds like a joke. It's not a joke. It's literally our history. Myself and my friend Higowitz, who's the vice chairman, were at New Year's Furry Ball in Delaware. And we were smashed, as one should be, on New Year's Eve. It was about 12:45. The year had just hit 2016. And we said, you know what? This area needs a convention. Because it had been about a year at that point. We said, this area needs a convention. And if no one else is going to step up and do it, how hard could it be? Not joking, that is literally the conversation we had. I think you all know how the question, how hard could it be, usually ends up going. But basically what happened, again, it sounds like a joke. It is 100% serious. We woke up the next day stone sober, and the idea still sounded good. And they say that if you come up with an idea while drunk, and it still sounds good when you're sober, it's a good idea. So that was really why, that is the why Furrydelphia exists. Because if you plotted like where the conventions are on the map, it was like, here's Philadelphia, and it's like here, 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 just like a circle. Like around the convention with nothing right there for as many furries as there were. So we're like, this area needs something, right? So in terms of starting an event, whether it is, this is, the panel's called How to Run a Convention, but it's really just how to run anything furry at all. There's a company up in the New England area called Barks and Rec. They run, a couple of my friends are the people that run that. And they do, like, they do nightclub events, park events, all ages events, 18 plus events, just a variety of furry events. And they usually pull between 200 and 300 people each event that they do. So not as big as a convention, but, you know, if you're pulling 300 attendees on like a monthly basis, it's a good amount of business. Hi, Condad. I ate lunch, I promise.
Did you drink?
I drank water.
Okay.
And now I'm drinking coffee.
That's what he says is in there.
It's definitely coffee. Not yet. And give me later. Yeah. What time is it now? 3:15? Give me an hour.
And they are selling coffee in the dealer's den, in the pound. It smells great. So if you're interested in good coffee, go in there and pick some up.
Thank you, Condad.
Yep.
This is Mr. T. That's literally his name.
Yeah.
This is my Condad. His job is to make sure I eat and drink water.
And not run himself down.
We're having a good time. Talking about how to run a convention.
Then you better plan to be here next week, too. Because it takes a lot.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for the good people that's donated their time to be here, it wouldn't happen. And most especially this man right here. So you've got to give him all the praises in the world. Not because I call him my son, because he's the one that pretty well helped mastermind this convention.
You're too kind, sir.
Hey, I gotta be.
Appreciate you.
Or I'm going to be stuck with the old lady all the time.
Fine.
Can we use the back of house elevators for Jonah?
What?
Can we use the back of house elevators for Jonah?
Why not?
Okay.
Knock yourself out.
I figured I'd ask.
Hi.
Thanks.
Okay, but now you have to come into this room.
Okay.
For 2 seconds.
We got, oh, no. I'm
ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Legoshi. They're like, finally, someone worth talking to. Oh, you don't have to sit. I just wanted to embarrass you.
5 minutes.
We're talking about how to run a convention.
Talking about what?
How to run a convention.
Yeah,
I know.
Is this on?
You don't need it. They're like, they're like 50 feet away.
Okay, cool.
Does everyone know who this man is?
I just saw his panel.
Yeah, he's here.
Nice.
Two panels in a row? Same row.
It's
As I was saying in opening ceremonies when we had a private conversation as well, I apologize I haven't gotten to say hi to you.
That's okay, dude. I knew you were here around or something.
Hell yeah. I wanted to go down to the bar and see you last night and then everything was on fire.
Dude, I couldn't. We got here at like 10, so we were just like, oh,
Alex
upstairs.
Told me that Sam was coming with you.
I wish Sam was coming, damn. That would have been sick.
That'd be cool.
He would have had a blast.
He also only calls me Randall. I always sign my emails Randall, and he always calls me Randall. He's cool.
He's great. Oh, so
he's cool. All right, man. Well, I'll hold you up.
Okay, cool.
These people are like, oh, get back.
Learn how to do a convention because I don't know how to do that. Just treat your guests well, just like Randy does.
Absolutely. Thanks. Hey, don't forget your.
Oh, right. Thank you. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, Jonah. I love you.
Bye, Randy. Love you too, man.
He had to throw in the man to make sure we know it wasn't gay. Hello. This is how to run a convention. You've already got the first step down, which is never be on time.
How about walking a convention? I don't know if I want to run. That sounds like too much of work.
Okay, you can walk the convention. Actually, I don't know if you can walk the convention.
No.
Point is, this, as I was saying, this isn't really like a how to run a convention panel as much as just how to run a furry event panel, and really, we could spin this into just be like how to run a thing panel, because the first step, really, of starting a convention or an event or a meet or anything that you want to do is to establish a demand, all right? If you said, I want to start a convention in Philadelphia, you would probably not really get a lot of traction due to the existing convention, which you're currently at. Same thing goes for Pittsburgh or Chicago or anything else, right? So, we started Furrydelphia, and I want to make one thing very, very clear, because I talk to a lot of people who want to run conventions, and their heart is not in the right place, and their mind is not focused on the right goal. So we started Furrydelphia, I want to be clear, we did not start FD because, oh, we're so cool and we want to run a convention and we're badasses and this and that and whatever else, you know, anyone might say. We recognized the need for an event due to the distance of other events and said, this community needs something here, and then we ran it. I have had conversations with people who have said that they want to run an event because they think it will get them friends or because they think it will gain them some kind of Twitter popularity, right? Everyone wants to be Uncle Kage, is basically what I'm getting. Because Uncle Kage is famous in the furry fandom and everyone knows who he is and everyone thinks he's so cool and this and that. And so I will have these conversations with people and I will say, they'll go, I want to be a con chair because con chairs, you know, like are popular, and I go, okay, well, name a con chair. And they go, Kage. And I say, great, name another one. And they're like, right? Who's the con chair for Apocalypse? These are rhetorical questions. Who's the con chair for Apocalypse? Who's the con chair of FWA? Who's the con chair of MFF? Right? Who's the con chair of TFF? Or further confusion, who are any of these con chairs? I would be willing to bet that most of you don't know any of them, because being a con chair does not get you popularity. In fact, you're going to end up with a bunch of people that hate you that you don't even know who they are.
You're going to get more people who hate you.
I have people who hate me, and I've literally never met them before. And the reason they hate me is because they hear some kind of thing about me from, like, you know, whatever. Like, some person is goofing off at the convention, and I'm like, stop, and they're like, no, and then we have to ban them, and now they're on Twitter telling their friends that I am an asshole, and then, you know, suddenly I know it, and people in California think I'm an asshole, who I've never even met. So, if you're doing it for popularity, not saying that anyone here is going to do it for popularity, and I'm also not saying that doing it for popularity is wrong. All I'm saying is that you're probably not going to find a lot of success in the goal that you're looking for. If your goal is to become popular, there are other ways to do it. And I'm not saying, I'm not being judgmental. I think wanting to be popular is a perfectly normal thing. I'm just saying that this is not the way to go about doing it. Because it's a ton of headache and a ton of investment and not a lot of return on that investment if that's your goal. Now, anyway. So, establish need is step one, right? Why am I filling this goal if there's a ton of furries around? Like, one reason, we, Furrydelphia, there have been talks of, like, oh, do we try to do fur meets? Do we try to, like, add things to our repertoire to do other stuff through the year? We've ended up not doing that, and the reason is that we've got Delaware Fur Bowl down in Wilmington, and we've got New Jersey Fur Bowl right across the river, and those happen pretty regularly. And so we just don't think, it's not our current assessment, that there's a need for like a monthly Furrydelphia meet, right? We may decide to do like a barbecue or something. We're talking about possibly implementing like a spring thing next year, but we're not doing a meet because there's no need. Even though Furrydelphia now has the size that it has, there's just not a need for that. It already exists. So establishing a need is step one, right? Serving the community. In my opinion, you should be doing this to serve the community. That is my opinion. Also, I skipped my regular disclaimer, which is that I am one man. I have largely made up my process. I never really worked a convention before Furrydelphia. I had a lot of experience working on non-furry events, and I've had experience leading teams. And being genuine when I say this, I have the sort of personality and charisma that allows me to be successful in a role like that, despite not having experience, right? And so when I started telling people, I want to be a con chair, I want to be a con chair, almost no one took me seriously. And it was okay, because I was 22, and no one in the fandom knew who I was. And everyone was like, this kid is just full of hiding. And that's a valid, that was a valid assessment at the time. I'm very proud to have proved all those people wrong. But anyway, so once you make sure, right, you're filling a need, the best thing to do is to just talk to people about what you want to do. That was what we did with Furrydelphia. We started talking to people about it. We made a Twitter page. Our first ever Twitter post was a poll asking people what the name of the convention should be. We had like Philly FurCon, other stuff, right? It was like four or five options, and one of them was Furrydelphia, and Furrydelphia got the most votes because it's funny. So that ended up being the winning option. But we just start talking about it. Word of mouth in this fandom, word of mouth is your best advertiser. And then like people started putting it on Twitter, and we also started talking with dealers, a lot of vendors, and said, hey, would you come and vend at a convention in Philadelphia? Because those people have followers. So we started talking to the people who have followers and say, would you come and do this? And they said, yes. So word of mouth, spreading it and getting people talking about it, engaging interest. Because if you're talking about running like a meet or something like that, and you're finding that a lot of people are kind of not really biting, you may not be barking up the correct tree. Or something about your message may not be resonating with people. And figuring out why that's happening is really hard. And I can't give you any advice on how to do that because it's a case-by-case basis. Anyway, step one is establishing your need. Step two, and this was something that we struggled with at first due to our lack of experience. Step two is to realize that this is a business. A lot of people don't want to think about it like that because, you know, we're all just here for a giant party and to have a good time. But it is a business. Now, it's not a business in that we don't have any employees. No one here gets a paycheck. I don't even get a paycheck. My hope is that someday we can change that, because I believe that people who work for conventions deserve to be compensated for their time. And candidly, that includes me. But that's not quite where we're at yet. So for now and for the very foreseeable future, Furrydelphia is 100% volunteer-driven. No one, not even me, the top, gets a single dime. In fact, this convention costs me money on a very regular basis. It's a lot of personal investment. And it may be easy to think, like, well, I could probably get away with this. I don't really need a business. I don't need that. Well, okay, well, you need to collect money. It costs money. Everything costs money. If you want to have a meet, even a meet, you want to go use someone's property for a meet, guess what they're going to want? Money. Guess what this hotel wanted? A whole lot of. So, like, we're not here for free. So, anytime there's a large exchange of money, it's safe to have a business. First of all, corporate structure is important. Second of all, it's important to shield yourself from liability. Because, you know, it's all fun and games until someone decides that you're personally responsible for something crappy that happened to them at your event and they decide to sue you. Now, that has never happened to us. And, right, fingers crossed. But it's important to have the liability. I got you. It's important to have that shield from liability. And so a company helps with that. It's not an immunity. It's not an invincibility. If you're grossly negligent, you can still have a problem. But having a corporation in between you and the people that you're servicing helps. And corporations, there is a structure in place that makes corporations' finances and taxes hard to do on purpose in order to keep people employed. Like that is a real thing. There are government lobbyists that make it hard to start companies, hard to do your taxes on purpose, because they don't want you to be able to do it yourself. They want you to have to pay them. That's where the conversation about LegalZoom comes in place. Let me tell you something. That $1,000 that LegalZoom wants from you, do you know what they're doing? They're filing two pieces of paper.
Seriously?
It will take them about 30 minutes. And I know that because guess who we started with? LegalZoom. Back then it was only $600. That was $600 of mine and Higowitz's personal money that we split to pay for that. Waste. Since then, I've helped four other people start their companies in Pennsylvania. Now, if you live in another state, I don't know what to tell you. You have to go figure it out for yourself. Pennsylvania, it's a form that you fill out. You have to give them all the fun stuff. Your name, your date of birth, your social security number, your address, a blood sample, your firstborn child, all that. But, you know, it used to be you had to print this form out. And then you had to fill it out with a pen. And then you had to put it in the mail or use this ancient monolithic device called a fax machine.
What? I think we just dated ourselves.
I've been dating myself a long time. But that's how it used to be. Now there's a website, and you punch all that in. Oh, and then once it was filed, you had to wait 6 weeks for them to send you back a piece of paper. Now, you go to the IRS website to, like, irs.gov/get an EIN. You put in, it's like, what's the name of the business? Type. What's your name? Type. All right, here you go. Instant. They give you an EIN like it's candy on Christmas.
Unless you want to be a charity.
Yeah. Well, you had a question?
Yes, in terms of your corporate structure, I'm assuming you incorporated something like 501c3 or what have you, like you go with the structure of like an LLC, limited liability partnership, I'm assuming LLC.
So I believe an LLC is a for-profit corporation structure.
It is.
Yes. So we are just a corporation.
Oh, so you're non-profit. Oh, okay.
We are just, yes, so we are a non-profit corporation.
We'd be a domestic corporation.
Yep. We're a nonprofit corporation, so the name of the company is just Furrydelphia Incorporated. The end. It's not Furrydelphia LLC or anything like that.
Is it something like a 501?
So we are. So there's two types. Let me get into that. There's two types. There's a 501c3 and there's a 501c7. There are other types. C5 is a thing. There are other types. But a lot of those are like, are you a church? Are you a library? Are you a school? Stuff like that. The kind of things that we're really going to be focusing on is C3 and C7. Now, differences. C7, easier to get. Easier to justify yourself as, which makes you easier to get. Less stuff that you can get away with. C3, more advantages, harder to get. Reason being, a 501c7 corporation. And don't worry too much about like taking notes or making sure that you remember. I highly recommend you go to YouTube and look up like what's the difference between a C3 and a C7. There are a lot of great YouTube videos I know because that's how I learned. A C7 is a social club. So if you're starting a chess club, or a Magic the Gathering club, or something like that, a C7 is probably the type of corporation you're going to go for. If you're just doing a fur meet, like a bowling event or something like that, you're probably better off going with a C7, social club. Now, why does this social club exist as a nonprofit? As far as the government is concerned, let's say that all of us in this room wanted to have a pizza party. I'm the guy running the pizza party. So I go to all of you and I say, hey, every single one of you, give me $10 and I will get us pizza so we can have the pizza party. The government is not going to insist that you pay taxes on giving me the $10. So that I can get the pizza, right? So imagine that on a grander scale, because we're not just getting pizza, we're getting a venue, right? I'm booking a hotel or bowling alley or a park. I'm getting porta potties for that park. I'm getting, right, a permit. I'm getting whatever it is, right? Whatever you have to get. You may have $4,000 or $5,000 worth of expenses you need to do, and if you have 200 attendees, you need each one of those, you know, for your $5,000, you need each one of your attendees to give you what? I'm bad at math. But the point is, I'm not making a profit off of that money. It's literally, hey, all you 200 people give me cash and I will throw this party. That's how the government sees it, literally. So that's why that's a nonprofit structure. A C3, and like I said, with a C7, you can't really quite get away with as much. I'm going to be honest, we've been a C3 for so long that I've kind of forgotten the major disadvantages to being a C7. It's mostly, I think, to do with like your donation structure and stuff like that. Like people can only donate so much money to you, things like that. A C3 is what you're going to find a lot of furry conventions are based as. Some are C7s, a lot are C3s. Furrydelphia is a C3. Believe Anthrocon's a C3. The point of C3 is that you're a charity event. And essentially, we're justified to the IRS as a C3 for basically being a charity gala type event. So, peek behind the curtain. This is why almost every furry convention partners with a local charity. Okay? I will be straight up dead honest with you guys. As much as we love to hit home that, oh, the furries are helping the local community and blah, blah, blah. That is true, and that is great. But also, by raising money and encouraging donations for another local community, that allows us to essentially say that this is a fundraising event for another charity. We're bringing you here. We're encouraging you to come by putting on a good show. Oh, look at us. We have a dance. We have a vendor hall. We have all this stuff. We're promoting the fandom. Also, we're bringing you in here as our captive audience so we can now say, hey, go donate to this other charity, right? As far as the IRS is concerned, that's what it is, right? That's what we tell the government is going on so that they don't try to take all our freaking cash. So that's basically the difference. You can get away with more with a C3. Like, with a C7, I believe you have to have, there's rules about, like, how much money you can take in. Like, you have to have membership dues, and it's a whole kind of, like, little bit confusing. I've not really gone down that. It's not confusing. It's just that I've dedicated all my focus to the C3 side, so I'm not really knowledgeable about the C7 side. Give it some research. There's lots of information about this. But my bottom line advice is, if you're thinking convention, 3 is probably the better choice. You're going to have to do a little bit more paperwork, but you're going to be better off in the long run. 7 is probably your better bet if you're looking to do like an event and you're probably looking to have like less than 200 or 300 attendees. You're probably better off with the 7. As for using LegalZoom or any other online service, if you really, really need help starting a business, I highly recommend finding a local accountant. Some small, and I'm not even talking like chain accountant. I mean like Google small business accountant near me. Find an operation that's like some dude who's a CPA, like out of his house doing accounting for people. That guy can help you get your business up and running 100% perfectly for a fraction of the price that a business factory like LegalZoom is going to be able to do. There's nothing wrong with using LegalZoom. The two issues that we had is, one, it's expensive, and two, if you need help, they're kind of hard to get a hold of, right? If we had a local guy and you really needed help, you could just show up at that guy's office and start asking him questions. LegalZoom, you got to call an 800 number, navigate all the buttons, and then hope you get someone who knows what the heck they're talking about. Yeah.
How much would it cost, I guess, in your Pennsylvania to file those two documents as opposed to, like, paying $1,000?
In Pennsylvania, you have to file for an EIN with the IRS, which is free, through the IRS website. It takes literally, like, 2 seconds. The other document that you need to file, it's a form something or something. You have to look it up. They all have crazy numbers. But it's an online form, and the fee for that form is $125 in Pennsylvania. I don't know what it is in other states. I think in some states it's even free. Like, I think it's free or at least very cheap in Delaware.
They have the corporate law.
Yeah, exactly. Delaware is mega corporate friendly. But it's going to be on a state level, so what you're looking for is your State Department of Business, the DOB. Also, I don't know how it is for other states, but at least in Pennsylvania, the state government is extremely helpful. The phone numbers, you will always get a person, and they're always really, really, really helpful. They're always happy to help walk through it. So I would recommend, for the sake of your wallet, unless you're rolling like you've got some giant bankroll and money's not an obstacle, then go for whatever. But if you are cash conscious, as I'm assuming all of us are, I highly recommend at least giving it a stab on your own. Whatever state you live in, I recommend Google how to start a business in Pennsylvania or wherever it is you live. There's going to be a lot of information on how to do it online. You can do it yourself. Also, one final side note. The moment you sign up for that business, you're going to start getting tons of mail from random companies that, because people filing a business is public record. There's companies that watch those public records. This is really scummy and I hate it. They watch those public records, they wait to see someone file a new business, and then they send you paperwork on really official looking letters where their company seals look like government seals. And they try to basically trick you. They'll have some name like the Pennsylvania Business Commission, which sounds like a government thing. It's not. It's a for-profit company. And they're saying, hey, you need this like letter of authorization to do business in Pennsylvania. And if you pay us $200, we'll do that for you and send it to you. Scam. You don't need it. A letter of authorization is an actual thing, but pretty much the only time you're ever going to have to get a letter of authorization is if you're like an immigrant and you're not a citizen and your bank or some government agency is giving you the runaround, right? A letter of authorization is like a thing that basically says we the government say that you are allowed to own a business. If you're a citizen, there's basically a 0% chance you actually need it. If you're not a citizen, there's still probably close to a 0% chance you actually need it. They just want your money. Yeah.
So I guess, like, to protect the privacy of the person who's, like, filing that information, I assume you didn't use your home address? Did you use, like, a P.O. box?
Haha. I did, in fact, use my home address. Please do not look up my home address. Yes, you can do that. Please don't. I'm asking you not to.
What would you recommend to protect
privacy? A lot of companies will be weird about using just a P.O. box. Honest answer, you can go to UPS. As much as I loathe UPS for shipping, you can go to UPS and rent. Basically, what UPS does is they do P.O. boxes, but it's not a P.O. box number. So they'll have the address. The address of your UPS is 123 Main Street. What they'll do instead of saying P.O. box number whatever, this or that, what they'll do is 123 Main Street Unit A 45, right? Or Unit 692, whatever.
I used to work at a UPS store, and they are actually financially separate from UPS, the shipping agency. They're
okay.
Usually franchised.
I got beef with the UPS
store. Yeah. So the UPS store is actually separate, so that's they're usually franchises, so that's actually pretty awesome. And yeah, it's exactly that. So they don't have post office boxes, they have suites. So we would have people that would be like, we're in suite, whatever. And we would literally have people showing up to our UPS store that would be like, hey, I ordered something from this company and their address is listed as suite number 303. How do I get to suite 303? And we're like, it's through that tiny little door right there in the wall. So they are considered street addresses, but not for like all the shipping.
But what's
agencies.
Good about them being street addresses is sometimes if you're getting things delivered, companies won't deliver to a P.O. box.
Right.
Also, companies, if you're putting your address into, like, a thing for, like, a website or something, it won't take... Like, if you're trying to sign up for, let's say, a credit card, and you put a P.O. box in your address, the credit card company's going to say,
You can't even get, like, a library card unless you have a physical street address, so that's a way to get a street address.
So I recommend UPS. I've actually been delaying that, so that's definitely going to happen, like, as soon as we're
But yeah, if it makes you feel any better, they're usually franchises and completely financially
separate. It does make
from
me
the
feel
actual
better. I don't really have beef with UPS as a company as much as my personal UPS delivery person. Anytime I have a package that needs to be signed, they take that little slip that says, sorry, we missed you, and they put it in my mailbox and they drive off. I work from home. You did miss me. I was here.
Well,
you're just
okay.
Lazy.
They just leave it on my doorstep.
I would prefer that. You know what they do for me? They go to the AutoZone down the corner, and they give it there. And they write, go to AutoZone. They literally write, go to AutoZone on my slip and give it to me.
Wow.
And then I go to AutoZone, and they're like, yeah,
they did
here
it again.
It is. Anyway. We've talked a lot about starting the business in general, but I think that's important because that's step number one. Because a lot of times I do these panels and people want to know, like, ooh, how do I choose a theme? How do I choose a staff? How do I, like, pick a venue? And I'm like, hey, how do you get money? Like, that's important. You know, so making sure that you, that you're, like, those are the first things. And I really talk about this a lot because that's what I didn't know starting, right? I did not know you needed a corporation to run a furry convention. And now I cannot imagine doing it without you. We're very, very much a corporate corporation. Like, absolutely. Company credit cards, like, the whole thing. Also, I'm not a giver of financial advice. This is not financial advice. That being said, company credit cards, if you can get them, are lovely to have for many reasons. Cash back adds up really fast. 2% cash back adds up really fast. if you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, 10% back is a lot of money. Yeah.
So I'm also assuming you have your own bank account as well.
Yes. Yep. Corporate bank account. Now, getting a company bank account is hard these days. You can thank this little fabulous piece of legislation called the Patriot Act, which basically says, hey, we got to make sure you're not a terrorist. And by that, I mean we got to really make sure you're not a terrorist. I just started a new company as a spinoff from Furrydelphia. It's a separate company, and I just went to get my for-profit company bank account. I had to go to the bank 5 times because every time I would get there, they'd be like, you need something else. They're like, oh, we didn't tell you that you need like your birth certificate or whatever. Like they said like, oh, we need a second form of identification. I said, no problem. Here's a debit card. They're like, that doesn't work. Okay. Here's my photo EMT card. That doesn't work either. Here's my, I don't know what to give you now. Like, it was pain in the ass.
Get a TSA pre-check. Isn't that enough to prove I'm not?
They need to check again.
They need to check again.
Beg your pardon. Cal, I am on vacation, my friend. Ah, yes. Are you calling me about the conference? Yeah. I'm on vacation right now, so if we can resume this in like 2 weeks, that would be really awesome. Cool, thanks. Asshole. Are you sure you don't have just a minute? No,
yes.
I'm very sure. I'm very sure I can't talk to you right now. Dude, I love answering the phone while giving pounds. It's so fun. It's really funny.
Speakerphone if it's like a call from like.
Oh, I know. I did that once. It was amusing.
It was fun.
Yeah. Back on topic. I assume. Go ahead.
I'm assuming because there's not a lot of people would generally knows that your main reason for having yourself set up as a corporate structure is in the event of you being sued, they know to differentiate between you and your personal stuff versus that stuff which belongs to the corporation.
Correct.
For purposes of being sued.
Correct.
Okay.
So, the way that you set up your stuff, right, if you were to sue Furrydelphia, please don't. if you were to sue Furrydelphia, now, how many people have read the Code of Conduct? In its entirety, front to back.
Define read.
Yeah, you can skim.
Okay. So, actually.
Yes.
Okay. So, did you love our absolutely fabulous release of liability form? I don't remember that part.
The part where it said like we can be negligible.
The part where it says that by coming here, you agree that you cannot sue us. And that the part that says that you can't sue us, any issue you have with us will be settled by binding arbitration in the county of Montgomery, in the state of Pennsylvania, and that says that you cannot be part of a class action lawsuit against us.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Great. So, if you're starting an event, I highly, highly, highly recommend you must have some kind of attendee agreement. Part of that agreement you can find, it's called a release of liability. Basically, hey, you're responsible for your well-being. You're responsible for your own safety. You're an adult. You're responsible for being able to recognize a dangerous situation and not put yourself into it, right? If you're walking around and there's water on the floor and there's a wet floor sign and you slip and you fall, you cannot sue me because you put yourself into that situation. Every single corporation on the planet will have you sign a release of liability. Technically speaking, there's no company in the United States that you're allowed to sue. Guess what? Lawsuits happen all the time. People can still sue you. I can write whatever I want into the code of conduct. You can still sue me. That being said, you are going to have to, first of all, agree you go to that arbitration. And you're going to have, if you live elsewhere, you're going to have to come here to do it. So that's the first thing that almost every corporation will say is, hey, you want to sue me? You have to come to my hometown. Because fun fact, if you don't have that in your agreement, someone in California wants to sue me and I don't have that in my agreement, they can require me to go to California for that lawsuit. Screw that. So you want to sue me? You have to come here. And we have to go to arbitration, which basically means that we sit with a mediator and see if we can work out an out-of-court agreement, right? This is all stuff to make sure that you don't get sued, and if someone does have an issue with you, that everyone makes the best effort to resolve it in a matter that doesn't involve attorneys. Now, you can still get sued. Are you an attorney?
Yeah, I work for the IRS.
Oh, no!
That's okay.
Oh, no! Are you all sitting here waiting for me to say the wrong thing? Okay, actually, that's in the wind. So actually, you people have $30,000 of my money, and I got my 90 days, we need 90 days thing about 75 days ago. So you're running out of time.
Oh, so you hear something next year.
Yeah. Well, I'll get another we need 90 days.
We mean 95 days on Venus.
Yeah. So, anyway. Right, no agreement. Basically, the way that it works is you should write your agreement in such a way that shields you from absolutely everything under the sun. That being said, there's a term that we love in the legal world. It's called gross negligence. Right? So, gross negligence. If you were to drop a live electrical wire into the crowd and someone got hurt, you can have whatever you want that says you can't sue me. Guess what? No. You're getting really sued. Because you were grossly negligent. You put people in danger in a way that the average person would deem to be unacceptable, right? So, gross negligence is usually how people will try to argue it if they decide that they're going to take you to court. There's still that arbitration. Almost always there's still that arbitration. But, right, that's so. What all of this says is when you have a corporation, someone can sue your company. They cannot sue you directly. Once again, when we get to that gross negligence, they can do a process called piercing the corporate veil, which basically means, now, if you're trying to run a furry event, that will never happen. You will never have the corporate veil pierced unless you are grossly negligent, or, and not only grossly negligent in terms of like putting someone in danger, but if you're just like an obvious criminal. Like, not to point fingers, but if you are, I don't know, embezzling money out of your furry convention charity.
A couple years ago?
Harrisburg. Yeah.
Harrisburg.
We won't say any names.
No capital.
If you're embezzling money out of your company, right, that's gross negligence. Right? You're committing a crime. So, in that case, right, if you are very obviously committing illegal activity and you're using the company to shield yourself from responsibility, they can do what's called piercing the corporate veil, which requires a jury to say, we recognize that this company is a sham used to commit illegal activity. They can dissolve your company and sue you directly for everything that you But you have to really mess up for that to happen.
And in fact, other board members can also be sued, so you darn well better have liability insurance.
Yes, absolutely.
Even the person who
but
is not
a lot of times, even your liability insurance will say if you're committing criminal activity, you're liable.
Yeah, but at least they'll protect the innocent people, theoretically.
Right.
Is it for purposes of piercing the court of appeal, usually there's a four-factor test that they do in order to employ that. But the general rule of thumb is to restore personal.